At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I read from a document of the Securities Exchange Commission, most recently 2022. We are proposing, said the SEC, to require registrants to provide certain climate-related information in their registration statements and annual reports, including certain information about climate-related financial risks and climate-related financial metrics in their financial statements. The disclosure of this information would provide consistent, comparable, and reliable, and therefore decision-useful, information to investors to enable them to make informed decisions about the impact of climate-related risks on current and potential investments. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Writing most recently at Defining Ideas, I welcome everyone to read it. It's at the Hoover site, about the SEC's proposed climate-related authorization. Richard, a very good evening to you. Your remarks about this take me to a case that I very much enjoyed reading about, 1889, Derry versus Peak. This is about a company that boasted it had the right to use steam or mechanical motive power instead of horses on a part of the public transportation route. That was a false claim. How does that inform the climate-related regulation the SEC is proposing? Good evening to you.
Yeah, well, the first thing we have to figure out is what is it that the SEC is supposed to be doing? And the general reason why this commission has survived better than some of the other Roosevelt convictions is this was not designed to support cartels. It was designed to support efficient capital markets by making sure that people didn't rely on their statements. And so what happens is when you issue prospectus, this is a major business, the company typically has knowledge about its own activities, which are not had by people who are buying on the other side. And so what happens is, in order to even the playing field, what they say is you have to disclose material risks of what are going on in your business so that they could have an accurate statement of the way in which things are going. And this word material is slightly mystical, but what it means on the one hand is you don't have to make in your registration statements disclosures of things that are so utterly remote and improbable that there's no reason to take them into account. And you don't have to tell people things that they already know is not a general situation. So you're constantly looking for informational asymmetries, something that the company knows, that's something that the investors, when they're trying together, cannot find. And to say that you have the authorization to use steam power along a whole route is to say that you have a huge competitive advantage of other people still using horses. If it turns out you have that authority, but only over part of the route, it means that you made a material misrepresentation as to the anticipated profitability of your statement. This will lead people to pay more for the stuff than it's worth. And so it's essentially a kind of clever and disguised form of theft. And so what you want to do is to stop it. Now, what Derry and Peak did was very interesting to stick face. It said that the claim against the issuers could not be brought because it wasn't proved to be fraudulent, meaning said with knowing that it was wrong or saying that it was done with reckless disregard of the proof. Now, I looked at this statement. I said, you've got to be wrong on this. How could they not know the limits in the terms of their own charter? How could it not be fraudulent? So I thought the erection of that particular barrier and then finding it decisive was really a terrible mess. Well, I wasn't alone, because it turned out just after the decision came down, Parliament passed the statute, which says that you better make sure that you've taken due care to make sure that these statements are correctly done, in effect overruling that particular decision, so that under the particular circumstances of that case, you can't hide behind a false claim of being innocently deceived by your own evidence. You have to basically own up to it. And so the SEC in that case, if it kept to those kinds of cases, would be doing a very good thing. Now, in the same year, 1889, there's another opinion by Justice Holmes in the United States. He was on the Massachusetts Supreme Court. And there was somebody who says, I have a number one rated bond to sell to you. And it turns out it wasn't the number one rated bond. And Holmes said, this is just puff, air. I'm not going to allow anybody to sue on this stuff, because if this case may be a good one, the next case coming around is going to be silly. And there are all sorts of ways that you could look at the market to see what the price of the bonds are to make your own judgment. He said, however, if you said anything that was false in a more concrete way, that was not puff, then under these circumstances, we're going to hold you responsible.
If I understand correctly, your Holmes example demonstrates that if the investor has the information available to him or her and seeks that information, the investor should be allowed to make whatever decision comes from that information. Correct?
Yes, but it says something further, which is, this is a system in which we have two sources of information, one from the defendant, one from the plaintiff. And we're not going to conduct the securities law on the assumption that plaintiffs have no independent way to validate any kind of claim that is made by anybody at any time. And so you're putting the onus back on people to do that. And so when you're kind of doing, putting together a very systematic and sophisticated system in which where there are gaps that could be cured more cheaply by the issuer or by somebody who's selling shares in the open market, then you put liability on them. But where there's either public information on the one hand and no reliance on the other, then in effect you don't do it. So this is the common law of securities regulation before the 1933 Act. And what the 33 Act does is it tries to codify the rules and the 34 Act, some on original issues and some on insider trading, all of which are designed to deal, if you understand it correctly, with informational asymmetries. And then I don't know if you read it, remember there was a case called CSC, an excellent opinion written by Justice Marshall. And he said, you are given a very complicated transaction called a roll-up, which is a way in which you can merge two corporations and sell securities off of the combined value. He says the information about this type of transaction, about this transmission, was so good that when somebody comes back and says, I see A, B, C, and D, but I wasn't told about E, he says, you can't bring that claim on E if, in fact, it's easily inferable from the things that you already have. And so, again, it's a kind of a dual responsibility system. We are trying to put the liability or the risk on the party who's most easily able to correct the system that's going on. So when you get to climate change, the question, does it look anything like these cases, like Deming, like Derrick, or TSC?
Yes, and we go now to the example you use in your presentation defining ideas about China, because the SEC and the Biden administration are now dealing with the fact that no matter what they mandate, no matter how they regulate, China will continue to misbehave for the balance of this century, making all efforts to regulate American industry look foolish.
Well, yeah, I mean, the point is so painfully obvious. China managed to exempt itself from all restrictions on greenhouse gases, notwithstanding that it's the second largest economy in the world, by saying that they were a developing nation, developing weapons of war to conquer the rest of the neighbors that it had. And the United States acquiesced in that, and it was a shameful form of stupidity in which the Western countries yield. Now, what China does is the president has, I think, over three times the amount of emissions that the United States does. In America, wholly apart from everything that's going on, there's a fetish today called supply chain management, which is practiced by many, many companies, all which says, can we squeeze carbon dioxide emissions out of our system by doing the following 58 different things? We know that that stuff is going on right now. My challenge to it is, I think they overstate the risk of carbon dioxide. But the more central one for these purposes is these guys are getting drops in the bucket out of the system while the Chinese are pouring buckets of pollution or carbon dioxide into the system. That's all you need to know to come to the conclusion that the fate of American industry because of carbon dioxide complexities is beyond the control of anybody here, because it all depends on what is widely known public information that the Chinese are basically burning up the track And the United States essentially is getting more unit of output for each unit of carbon dioxide. We should be the one who emits carbon dioxide because we could get 10 units of goods for it, where the Chinese only get two or three. They're very inefficient in China in terms of the way they're doing it. But the SEC, as far as I'm concerned, is just brain dead. It puts forward this stuff on the theory that the United States is the center of the universe. It then wants to fragment this information. So let's say you get 10,000 companies that you have to collect this information for. Each of them, by definition, could be producing only a tiny fraction of the total pollution in the United States if carbon dioxide is a pollutant. And so what you're doing, you're taking de minimis non curat lex. The law does not concern itself with trifle. And then you impose obligations. These are not disclosure obligations. That's just a misnomer. Disclosure obligations is what you saw in Derry v. Peek, where they knew, or damn well should have known, what their own charter said. In this case, they're telling you, please go investigate everything that you do throughout your entire firm. That could be 100 different manufacturing plants in 40 different countries, and everything that your suppliers do and some of what your customers do. And then tell us what's going to happen. And the answer is, if you tell them anything, of a range from 0 to 100, given the fact that this is a tiny situation, nobody will be influenced in the slightest, except perhaps in this way. A company says, we have very dirty productions and we have very high efficiency rates. A lot of people will say, hey, that's a recommendation to buy. If they're polluting, those are trivial losses. If they're getting competitive advantages, those are huge gain. So what we want to do is we want to buy in companies that seem to have high CO2 emissions rates because they have a competitive advantage over everybody else. The SEC does not look at things that way. They assume that everybody who gets this information is going to be benign social warriors like they are, when in fact, most of the people invest in these markets are going to be trying to figure out if there's any information, how to use it to their advantage. And the only value that you can get from this stuff is to know that your company is cheating. Everything else is of no value whatsoever. And what they do is they don't explain how it's going to change something. You could read that entire dreadful report. There's not a single number in there about the amount of pollution, the change of this, that, and the other thing. And there's an assumption that if you standardize it, it's going to be valuable to you, but they don't tell you how to standardize it. And if you really want standardization, there's a way to do that. You get a private company, and what it does is it takes all the available information from the world outside there, and what it does is it then organizes its own index in which it rates the effectiveness of various companies, and then it can sell that to potential investors who want to buy it. Well, the question you have to ask yourself is, if you had these information aggregators who sold this kind of information, would there be a market for anybody to buy it? And my answer would be no. I think they know too much already, and they care too little. So what the SEC is trying to do is to force not the disclosure of what you know, but a massive investigative system, which is beyond its charter, to discover information when you get it will be of no value whatsoever. These characters have not the slightest degree of self-reflection. There's not a slightest awareness that they could be wrong on anything. You could read this entire dreary, incompetently written, repetitive report, and they'd never say, here's an objection and here's why it's wrong. It's just the most remarkable piece of intellectual double talk by the Biden administration. It's a kind of disgrace. And this is not talking from somebody who says, I don't want this SEC around. There are certain things that it can do. But generally, John, when you're talking about administrations that are being involved for anti-fraud reasons, you want them to confine themselves to their mission. And in this particular case, they're not trying to combat any kind of fraud. What they're trying to do is essentially make it so difficult. They're trying to basically, you know, join with the Environmental Protection Agency to drive CO2 out of the system. And what they have to do, and these have never done it, is make a serious case as to what the optimal level of CO2 emissions turns out to be. They claim that the world is turning upside down when we went from 350 to 420 of carbon dioxide. And this is in a universe where water vapors are much more powerful greenhouse gas than is carbon dioxide. You know, maybe their answer is why this looks to be wrong, but they don't come from the SEC. The SEC and the Biden administration are dogmatic warriors who simply don't know how to engage the opposition. And since they can't engage it, they just ignore it.
And in your measure, is the SEC going to carry through on this regulatory proposal? Will Congress vouchsafe in your measure?
I think the answer is probably with two-thirds of it, yes. That is, there are three tiers. First, right. You tell us what you are doing, which is much more difficult than you think if you turns out to have 100,000 employees and 75 plants around the world. I think that will they will certainly put forward.
What about the suppliers? What about the second part, the suppliers?
The second part on the suppliers, I'm not so sure that one will make it. I mean, getting the information will be impossible. Somebody said, why should we tell you our trade secrets, which is what you need to evaluate it? We're going to put out our own carbon dioxide reports. Why do we have to have you
and
on?
And tier three.
And the third stage, the general view is that the SEC is playing it strategically. Okay. They put out this particular dumb proposal on the grounds that when they pull it off, they can say, see, we've compromised. We've listened to the public at large, and we've taken out the least efficient part of the system. And that's true. It is the least efficient part of the system. But the great tragedy is the whole system is completely dumb, and they just don't understand it. The Biden administration on the whole carbon dioxide situation is just a tissue and a compilation of incredible blunders on about every kind of thing that is happening. And it turns out that if you have the great minds like John Kerry, one of the dumbest people ever to work on these kinds of subjects, out there as your champion, you know that you're in very bad shape.
Professor.
And of course, one last point is if China's not going to change, nothing we do will matter.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution reminding me of my reading of the 17th century when the Puritans had a better idea. Imagine a world without sin. Let's prosecute. Victor Richard Epstein, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.